Mental Health Monday
on Radio City Talk
with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.
Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. We're here to talk about mental health. We do it on the radio every single Monday, and we've got some more great guests lined up for you, both this week and upcoming weeks as well. We'll keep you right across that on social media too. You can follow us at Radio City Talk and the hashtag Mental Health Monday. We've got an event which is coming up this coming Tuesday, as in tomorrow, as we do the show live, at The Brink, which is a bar which is set up in Liverpool, and it does some incredible work and has been doing for a number of years now. It's all about addiction, and addiction awareness is something we're going to touch on as part of this week's show. Instantly you think addiction, you presume what, drink or drugs, maybe gambling, maybe sex addiction. We hear about that occasionally. We hear things about mobile phone addiction, video game addiction as well. We'll touch on all those things and some of the definitions around it too. Let's welcome to the studio Carl Bell and David Barnacle from The Brink. Carl, David, great to see you both. Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon.
And we've also got Jim Byron with us, who's the lead practitioner at SHARP, Self-Help Addiction Recovery Program at Action on Addiction. Jim, great to see you. Thank you for your time too. David Barnacle, I'm going to start with you if that's okay. There's an event taking place tomorrow, Tuesday, at The Brink, and it's a look at addiction awareness. Now, you described it as a light-hearted yet eye-opening workshop. Addiction, what springs to mind when you think addiction?
Well, due to my 5-6 years in that kind of environment, addiction to me, as soon as you say the word, it's more of a subtle thing. It's like a spectrum of behaviour that can involve, you know, anything which can become quite problematic but difficult to curb, if you know what I mean. So you've obviously got hard drinking drugs, you know, but you've got a lot of, you know, you've got caffeine and sugar and people's relationships to food and, you know, people's relationships to other people. And I suppose the plethora of all those things comes to mind when the word gets said to me or when I use it. You know, these days,
because we and you liken it to those, you know, the hard drugs and the drink. I've got the official dictionary definition here: any behavior you indulge in that has negative consequences, yet you continue to do or feel powerless to stop. Now, Carl, you could throw into the mix there relationships that people find themselves in, work life balance that they've not been able to get right, but you can't really seem to do anything about. It even says as well, the idea of like procrastination and resentment, feelings that you have that you can't shake off, that you're addicted to as well. And that really broadens it out, doesn't it, as to what addiction actually is.
That's it. You know, Dave was right about what he said there. I mean, I'm a recovered alcoholic and a recovered addict. And I know that when I dealt with my initial problems of drink and drug addiction, you know, other addictions popped up, like caffeine and sugar, codependency. But we hear from clients and customers, and I hear from friends, you know, multitude of addictions. You know, I think mobile phones is a massive one now. You know, I think a lot of young people are so tied to them, you can only call it an addiction. You know, see what they're like if you take it off them.
It's a strange one, isn't it? Now, June, you work on this like sort of day in, day out. Can I ask you about mobile phones? Because I think there'll be a lot of people who will do that thing where you find yourself looking at the mobile phone and you're not really looking at anything. And to be honest, sometimes you're not really sure that you've even been paying attention to what you've been looking at. It's become a habit which you've almost lost control over. And according to that definition we read out, that's an addiction, right?
Well, I mean, I suppose it depends on how severe the consequences are. It's certainly an habitual way of behaving. But addiction is a lot more severe than that, you know, in that it will create consequences to in all areas of your life, to the point where your work, your relationships, everything in your life becomes small and the addiction becomes larger. I suppose with mobile phones, that's not necessarily the case. I mean, people are still able to function with their lives, but it's definitely a repetitive, compulsive pattern of behaviour that can consume people, you know. I suppose if you look at it in one way, it does get in the way of your relationships, because often people are sitting around the dinner table or, you know, at home, kids are upstairs in the bedrooms on social media, and you're not actually interacting with other human beings, so the quality of your relationships can be affected. So in that respect, yeah, it's definitely an addiction.
In terms of people who come to see you at Action on Addiction, what are those addictions which are the most prominent still now in 2019? What are the most prominent addictions that people are dealing with in their lives?
The most prominent addictions now, certainly that I deal with in our treatment centre, are chemical addictions. It's alcohol. And I don't see people will see that as a serious chemical to become addicted to, because it's socially acceptable. But it's a very dangerous drug. So alcohol, yeah, is definitely one of them. Heroin, cocaine, and also food and sex and gambling. Gambling's become quite prevalent as well now.
Yeah, I was going to come on to gambling because I think gambling's one of those things which is much, much more accessible in a way that it maybe wasn't before because of the use of mobile phones as well. But in regard to drink, why is it, do you think, that as a society we've not yet been able to grasp the addiction issues around alcohol? That we've had it for a long time, it's been around for a long time, different countries have tried, you know, prohibition and stop people doing it, and yet people still fall into the traps in addiction around alcohol.
Mm-hmm. It's just so socially acceptable. It's just seen as the normal thing to do. Everything that we do is in much of our lives is focused around drinking. I mean, if you walk on every street corner, there's a pub there. We are just conditioned in a certain way to think that it's normal and it's okay. And people don't even stop to take stock of their lives and see it, the effect that it's having on them, until it becomes really, really serious and they can't take anymore and can't function anymore. But yeah, it's just become a normal way of life.
There is a really odd social stigma, I always think, around drinking or not drinking. So if you show up to a birthday party and there you go, and you go get a lemonade, you're not having a drink. No, I'm driving. All right. That, Carl, I don't know this. You know, it's part of the story of the journey. But there's this thing where there's like a stigma not to take part in drinking. Oh, we're all doing it. Why are you not doing it? You become a bit of a social pariah if you decide you don't fancy a drink at a christening or a wedding or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm nearly 12 years now without a drink, and most people who know me know I can't drink. Because I turn into a raving lunatic, to be honest. So I don't drink, you know, because of that. But whenever I meet new people, definitely, or I go to parties or do's where people don't know me, you know, I'm safe today to go into environments where there's a lot of drink, you know, and it doesn't affect me. But people still think that you're the strange one because you don't drink. You know, to be honest, when I grew up, you know, my dad used to tell me, don't trust anyone who doesn't drink. And that's something I used to believe, you know, in my teens and my 20s and my 30s, that if someone didn't drink, don't trust them, you know. But it's just wrong thinking, isn't it?
Parents pass on some strange advice or like throw away bits of advice with it. Yeah, but he won't necessarily take it seriously. Can I ask you about the feelings? We look at definitions of addiction, sort of that period of time, more than a decade away from drink for yourself. Can you still remember those feelings, the feelings of addiction, of I've got to get my next drink? I've got to have that feeling that drink provides to me.
Yeah, I can. You know, I remember it vividly. You know, it's part of what keeps me sober and keeps me driven to lead the life that I lead today. You know, I registered as an addict in the 80s. I was a heroin addict then, you know, and what I was given was registered at the DDU and given a methadone script for 7 years, you know, and I was never offered abstinence-based recovery, which is what we try and offer at The Brink and what Action on Addiction offers, abstinence-based recovery, you know. But to do that, you've got to deal with what's wrong with you. When people stop drinking and stop taking drugs, there's something within them, you know, that keeps driving them to get some ease and comfort that they don't have within themselves, you know, and that's part of what treatment is. It was to help people deal with and process the things that have gone on in their lives or the things that they think, you know. But yeah, I remember and I hated it. I hated being dependent. I hated being heroin dependent. I hated being alcohol dependent when I finished. I hated it, you know, having to do things that I wouldn't normally do to get money or to get drink or to get drugs. It's a horrible way of being, particularly when they stop working, which is what happened in my case. They stopped making me feel okay. So I was just continually driven on to drink and use more and to feel worse and worse.
What was that, or what does it feel like, that pull to drink? What is that feeling? What is that, the feeling of that addiction?
Well, it's just an overwhelming compulsion that you can't deny. You know, you can't deny it on your own. You know, the way I look on it is when I was drinking and using on my own, I was powerless. I didn't have enough power not to drink or to start using. You know, and then once it started, I'd be off. You know, it was always the first one that got me. And once I had the first one, I was off and running. You know, so I needed help in not taking that first one and in not starting, you know, and then trying to deal with what was wrong with me internally. Instead of trying to fix externally.
And what happens, or what's that voice like? You know, the voice where there'll be a lot of people who just might go out for a drink, and they might have two or three drinks, but they know maybe they're up the next morning or something like that. So they'll go, better not, and they'll go home and go to bed. jump in the shower the next morning and they'll think, okay, good job, I didn't have any more than that. What's that like in terms of how strong is that voice, do you think, in an addict? Or does that voice disappear, or is that a voice you can choose to ignore, or a voice that you're sort of like powerless to heed advice from?
It's different for different people. I know some people who say they could socially drink when they first started drinking. I never could. I could never choose to go out and drink for a couple of hours, or just spend £5 or £10, or to have 2 or 3 or 4 pints. For me, as soon as I started, I'd have this overwhelming compulsion where I'd want to continue. I know it's not the same for everyone, but that's the way it was for me. It was just an overwhelming compulsion to carry on.
Gene, that's absolutely fascinating from sort of Carl's testimony there of what he's experienced. And that idea that the addiction isn't just you and the chemical, or you and the whatever it is. There's something else that means you're drawn to the addiction. So just going, well, just stop drinking then, or stop taking drugs, it doesn't work, because there's something in the mind which is drawing you to something. And from what Carl suggested there, it could be drink, it could be drugs, yeah. It could be caffeine, it could be other things as well. Is that a large part of your work then, working out what that other thing is, where that drive is coming from?
There's a physiology to it and a neurology to it, you know, and people's tolerance levels actually, get less, or you need more and more of the drug. You have to increase more and more because your tolerance has got higher. So people are drinking more and more, and then as they stop drinking, that drive to carry on drinking or use them becomes stronger, because they need to get the same fix again, and your body eventually becomes dependent on it, and then the neural pathways in the brain are set up to kind of just keep using to the point where your physiology, physically, you can't take it anymore. And then that's when people start, knocking. Eventually, hopefully, if knocking on the doors of treatment centres like ours. If they don't, often people, they die from this illness, unfortunately.
Well, and when people do come knocking on the door, do you find that actually their desire for help might be very, very strong, but actually their desire to carry on doing the addictive thing that they're involved in is even stronger, that people are desperate to stop doing the thing they're doing, and they're desperate for that intervention?
It's almost, it's like torture, isn't it, really? Because part of them knows, I can't carry on like this. My life's in ruins physically, I'm mentally, I'm battered, and I want to find a way out. But at the same time, the neural pathways, the physiology, the thinking, everything is geared now, to getting that fix, to getting that drug. It's a difficult thing to work with, is the ambivalence that people suffer with when they come into a treatment centre. But if we can work with them on the side of the ambivalence, and give people hope, which we do in our treatment centre, and they see other people getting recovery, it fuels hope the amount of people that have come through our doors now and succeeded and got well, it's mind-blowing. So, there is a way out. People can get well and you can beat addiction. It's not an easy journey at all. But, trying to do it on your own is going to be the hardest thing, and you will feel like you're in a black hole and there's no way out. But when you come to a treatment centre like ours or other sources of support, and you see that other people are doing it with their support, you just get your life back on track.
We've got Jim Barron with us in the studio, lead practitioner at Sharp, based at Action on Addiction as well. Carl Bell sharing his story as well. David Barnacle from the Brink, who've got this workshop event taking place at the Brink in Liverpool City Centre Tuesday at 2:30 p.m. Carl, can you remember those sort of feelings of, I want to get help? Was there a moment that stands out for you where you thought, right, I need to do something here?
Yeah, I mean, I had loads of windows of opportunity, to be honest. I was hospitalised loads of times. I had seriously detrimental to me health. I had cirrhosis and hepatitis. I've been dead a number of times and brought back to life. Been on life support machines. Been really seriously ill with me drinking and addiction. And at all them points, there's windows of opportunity. Thankfully, I took the last one that I had. But for probably about 2 years before I stopped, the last couple of years of me drinking and me using was horrendous. And most days I didn't want to start, but most days I started as soon as I woke up. It's horrible. It is really horrible.
And what sort of things life-wise had you found, or did you find had been passing you by while you'd been sort of caught up in the addiction and the fight against addiction?
To be honest, for most of my active addiction, I did well in life. I had good jobs, I had a good family, I had a wife, You know, from the outside world, it would look like I had life made. I had my own house. I went on foreign holidays a year. But nobody knew who I really was. I continually needed ease and comfort from taking, drinking drugs continually. You know, and as June said, I would, you know, the amount that I needed would always be increasing, you know, until eventually it just stopped giving me ease and comfort. And then there was no amount that made me feel okay. And so I was snookered then.
With that, with the work and the family and the holidays, was there something in your mind which was saying to you, well, you're doing all right. Can't be that bad because you've still got X, Y, or Z.
Yeah. You know, and each time something, you know, detrimental to me health happened, you know, I would think, you know, I'd brush myself down and I'll try and control it this time. And I never could. You know, I'd sometimes switch what drugs that I used. I always drank, but I sometimes switch what drugs that I used, you know. I wasn't, addicted to heroin from some point in the mid to late 80s until I started using again not long before I come into recovery. I would occasionally use, but, you know, throughout that whole time, you know, I addictively used other drugs and other substances, you know, illicit drugs, cocaine, crack, pot, speed, LSD, you know, but also drugs off pharmaceutical drugs, you know, prescription drugs that I get off my doctor as well. You know, just anything to make me feel different.
As part of your recovery, we touched on that idea of there's something that's driving that addiction. Did you find it in yourself, what the issue that had kept leading you down these paths to choose different types of drugs, to keep turning to drink, even though it was obviously starting to have a detrimental impact on your health?
I had one of them moments, you know, after sleeping in the park, you know, and having the worst DTs, you know, the delirium tremens in my life. I stepped in front of a bus on the last day of me drinking, you know, because I just couldn't face being me anymore the way that I felt, because there didn't seem a way out. And that feeling terrified me. You know, I would never want to feel like that again. You know, and so when I did get clean and sober, part of the reason for staying clean and sober is that I never felt like that again. But you're left with all the things to deal with. You know, and as Dave said earlier on, you know, I could use, you know, once I got clean of hard drugs and drink, I have used other things, you know, to find ease and comfort. That today I choose not to. Nicotine, caffeine, sugar, you know, because again, it's just about finding comfort in something, you know, not to the same detrimental effect as what drinking and hard drugs were to me. But, you know, I have still used them to try and feel better in the past.
For people who are currently facing addiction, who are going through maybe something like what you were going through, and they're getting to a point where, you know, you talk about having an attempted suicide or stepping in front of a bus. For people who are looking for hope in a place where they can't see any, can you give people a sense of maybe a time frame or a process that you went through from that moment, from the lowest point to the point at which you thought, you know what, I'm back in control of the situation. I feel like I'm in a better place. I imagine there's a lot of people who are maybe in a situation as low as yours or spiraling that way, who are thinking, I can't find that hope. I can't see that hope anymore. Is that hope there for them?
It's different for everyone. You know, for some people, they may come to the brink of change and find it in days or weeks. They may find it when they go into the treatment centre. You know, they may find it there. You know, I only started feeling safe when my obsession left me, and my obsession didn't leave me for 8 months. So I didn't feel safe. That was just my own journey. But, you know, everyone's is different, you know. But there is no hopeless cases. Everyone can stop. You know, recovery is there. You know, from what I know is that, you know, you can't do it on your own, though.
This is the event taking place on Tuesday. Then there's an event in London on Wednesday. Can you give a mention to this one as well? This is the Duchess of Cambridge.
Princess Kate, yeah. She's doing a big event on behalf of Action on Addiction, as she is the patron. So a couple of people from up these ways are actually going down there to speak of their experiences in amongst the lots of important people and, you know, people within the organisation and further afield with Kate present.
That's Kate. I always call her Kate Middleton still.
Yeah,
she was there to open the brink.
Well, she came on Valentine's Day 2012. We opened in September 2011, but she came down in the February in 2012 to give the brink and Action on Addiction her patronage. And she's at the gala dinner to celebrate, you know, the first addiction awareness week. So she's going to be at the gala dinner tomorrow night Wednesday night in London.
And some of the team going down there as well. We hope they have a good night as well and continue to spread the great work that goes on in the Brink in Liverpool. Dave, this event on Tuesday, we've touched on Carl's journey. Can we touch on some of the wider issues around sort of behaviours, food, sex, sugar, caffeine, technology? Are these more 21st century addictions, do you think?
Yeah, and maybe, you know, as we sort of discussed in the off-break, I mean, there can be different words. I think we need a bit more of a vocabulary around addiction because, you know, a lesser form of addiction, if you like, which might apply to more of the subsidiary behaviours you've just mentioned, could be the word craving. You know, craving could be seen as like on the same kind of spectrum of behaviour as addiction.
But obsession or compulsion.
Yeah, there's obsession and compulsion. I mean, maybe if people are more comfortable with the definition of addiction, that it's something where life simply becomes more, you know, unmanageable and that thing that which they are addicted to is number one, then that's okay. So maybe that's why these kind of events and conversations are good to have, because then we can establish more vocabulary around behaviours that still mirror the exact same pattern as addiction. Maybe the fallout isn't as bad, but you know, all of the blocks still fall into the same places, and they all come from the same thing that Carl was talking about before, which was the lack of ease and comfort in the self, which produces that behaviour. Now, the outcomes of that behaviour might not be as extreme as alcohol addiction or heroin addiction, but they're coming from something which applies to lots of human beings, which, you know, you start getting into the thing of like human condition.
Now, here's a question then. Let's throw this at the expert, June. Carl obviously setting out sort of the issues that he faced, you know, that people might associate with being sort of all-encompassing addictions in related to drink and drugs. But actually, is there an argument that might say, along that spectrum that David's talking about there, that you might have almost like a cumulative effect of other maybe substances? It might be caffeine, it might be sugar. You might also have, you know, issues with maybe sex addiction, food, gambling, technology, compulsions around work as well. That actually, if we talk about damaging, the cumulative impact of all of those little things might also have a hugely negative impact on someone's life. But it might not be just one thing. It might be a series of things.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what Dave's saying as well is let's not get dogmatic about what addiction is and just see it as either, you know, someone hitting up with needles or your alcoholic and sitting on the street corner, you know, with a brown paper bag. It is broader within society, and lots of people suffer with these ways of behaving. And if people can see that it is more broad and that there is a human condition, if you like, then we might not be so apt to stigmatise or judge people that have gone to the extremes in terms of, you know, sitting in the gutter with the brown paper bag. I think there is complications and consequences, mostly on your relationship with yourself and with other people, from what you will, or I'd term compulsions or obsessions, not necessarily, you know, severe dependence and addictions. But I think if it's having an effect on your relationship with yourself, with your relationships with other people, where you lose a sense of who you are, if you like, you lose touch with your purpose in life, with the essence of what it is to be a human being, and how you start, and how you treat yourself as a human being, and how you treat other people, then that's when the alarm bells need to be ringing, really, because it affects your mental health as well. I mean, at the beginning of this interview, you spoke about mental health awareness as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just an addiction; it is a mental health problem as well. So I think people have to be mindful of whether it's affecting your mental health as well, whether you're becoming depressed or anxious. What is it that you're medicating in yourself? I mean, there are some theories and philosophies that say you're medicating a deep, deep spiritual emptiness within yourself as well, and that as human beings, we've all started to disconnect from what our essence is to be on this planet, and we can get a lot deeper with that, you know, and in our treatment centre sometimes we do. But yeah, I think across humanity, if it was to go that broad, we're all affected by it in some way, and we're all affected by it in technology. I mean, you know, phones and stuff, what you're talking about before, we're losing our sense of who we are as human beings.
But I think that comes up, and you know, if anything, I've learned anything in the 100 now, however many episodes we've done of this show, that there is a sense of that in sort of in 2019, that we've lost an essence of what it is that we're doing, and we think, or we're told, that it's the new phone, or it's the new car, yeah, or it's having a great job, or it's having a great house. We're told that if we have these things,
then you'll be happy.
Then we'll be happy. And then suddenly you get the stuff, and you suddenly go, well, should I feel better about it? And then you don't say anything, because everyone's looking at you going, well, they've got it all now. They've got the phone and the car, and they've got the mortgage, they got married, they got the kids.
Further away from the self, all that stuff.
People lose sense of identity as well. They don't know who they are anymore. But it does go to a deeper core level of who we are as human beings, and what are we here to do with our lives? Is it just to have the car, you know, the white picket fence, you know, the new phone, the nicest outfit or whatever? Or is it something else? Are we here to live out some sort of purpose and find out who we are as human beings?
And that's the weird thing as well, that you then have experiences, and then you realise, don't you? You know, the day you left your phone at home and you didn't think about it and you thought it was great, and then you went for a picnic in the park with your family and you just kicked a ball around or played whatever, and you thought, what an amazing day, didn't we? Or the time you just went for a walk and we watched a beautiful sunset and you thought, oh, isn't this wonderful? And you weren't thinking about whether or not you paid your rent that week, and you weren't, but you were thinking, oh, this, I'm finding some sort of intense happiness there. But then it's like the system isn't built
for that. There's no better connection, is there? There's no better connection, that's the word, than being with other people, you know, your family, and having that connection and your spirit connecting with theirs. And if we lose connection and contact with other human beings, I mean, lots of people in active addiction, they end up in complete and utter isolation. And that connection is something that can help you to get back on track. But it's learning. You've lost a sense in active addiction of how you do that. So it's learning to nurture that relationship with yourself fundamentally, and then rebuild them relationships with people, and like you say, the simple things, to appreciate this beautiful sunset, to go out into nature and enjoy nature, and in contact with it.
Exactly. But then there'll be people who will think, oh, that sounds like you're being a bit of a hippie, or a bit
corny.
The science
bit corny
now,
but yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Actually, the greatest quote that's around at the minute is from Johan Harry's book. He's done the best research, the most up-to-date research on addiction. And the quote being, the opposite of addiction is connection. You know, it's not. So it's isolation, which is so intertwined with addiction. You know, being closed off from people and the world around you. That, you know, there's something to be said for that.
Carl, I've got to ask you about stigma around addiction. There was the mentioned by June before, this idea of, you know, drunks with the paper bag with a drink in, literally sitting in the gutter. Presumably when people meet you now, Carl, and they see you, smart bloke, nice shirt, you know, working at the Brink, great organisation as well. When you tell your stories, do people's, like, do their eyes pop out of their head? Can they believe? Because many people would have, you know, judged you during the time of your addiction over being a junkie or a drunk, that had dismissed you, thought, well, there's no hope for him. What's it like when they meet you now and you share your story?
Amazement with some people. I'm a totally different person than the person who I was, because I don't want to be that person. Because that person needed to drink and use drugs to be happy, and I don't have to do that today. So yeah, I mean, in the Brink and in Sharp, we see miracles every day. People changing, you know, having a different outlook towards life, having a different outlook towards themselves. As something that June was saying, really, I believe it's about connecting to your best self. You know, connecting to that inner spirit, which is different from the one that you're trying to connect to when you're needing to drink or use drugs to feel better.
It's an amazing journey you've been on, Carl, and it's great now that you're part of the Brink. Will you be taking part in the workshop work?
I'll be there. I'm not sure how much involvement Dave will let me have. I might be a guinea pig or something.
100%.
Yeah. Good stuff as well. If people want to find out more or they want to come down, Dave, what's the best place for people to head to? So there's a Facebook event that people can show
if
interest
you,
in.
If you just type in addiction awareness into the little search in Facebook, they'll see it from that. But yeah, just come down regardless to the Brink on a Tuesday afternoon, get a nice coffee, you know, maybe something nice to eat. There is food available for everyone, by the way, at the event. So everyone will be catered for. But yeah, we're on Parr Street, which is just off Slater Street.
And it's Addiction Awareness Week all this week as well. Do you know, people want to find out more information about Sharp and Action on Addiction? you're right across social media, but also websites, phone numbers and that people can find online.
Yeah, 01517030679 is our number.
Well, steady on, hang on a minute. 7030679.
0679.
It's an 0151 number. Yeah. I'll give that one a mention. 01517030679. If you missed it just then, you can download the podcast and listen again to it. You can rewind it as many times as you like. I hope the day event goes really well for you tomorrow. Thank you all for coming on and sharing your story as well. Addiction Awareness Week, all this week, event taking place at the Brink on Parr Street. That's 2:30 on Tuesday. And if you want to get involved in sharp action on addiction, the number that June mentioned, 0151 703 0679 at Carbell. Dave Barnacle, June Barron, thank you for being our guest this week
thank
on Mental
so
Health
much.
Monday. Nice really one. Appreciate
thank
joining
you,
us
Beth.
On the programme.
Thank you.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.